Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
Dr. Redmond.
And we're back for, well, it's time to finally start digging into MetaRead pretty hard. We've been waiting for this. Like, we always knew this was coming. But 1210, the episode that you can clearly say that if we hadn't already, you know, created a MetaRead, this is the episode that necessitates it. I know I was joking about that last week, but this is literally true. Whew. Yeah. Damn. And I gotta say, in a way, thank God I never want someone to do badly in their career. But thank God Jane Lynch's show got canceled, because she was suddenly available to come back and do this half season of television.
Yeah.
That is just so vital to understanding him as a character.
Yeah.
So I'm so happy that happened. But, you know, again, this is not, I'm not against her. I want her to do well, but I'm really glad she was available for this, and she wouldn't have been had her show been on the air. She played a guardian angel who was bad at her job. I never saw an episode. I was just aware of its existence.
But what was it called?
Angel from Hell, I think? No, it wasn't a good show.
It never even crossed my path.
No, exactly. You didn't even know she had a show after Glee. That is the extent to which... Yeah, because this show started, right? And she was going to be on more regularly, and then she booked Glee. And so she was just gone from the show for a while. And then she got another show, and, you know, it was a whole thing. But anyway, before we get into that, though, I just want to say, I want to make a correction that I'm a little embarrassed about. We were talking about torture on the Beyond Borders podcast episodes. We did the whole episode about brainwashing and torture. You remember the episode where the teenager...
Oh, yes.
Okay. Anyway, I accidentally referred to the famous FBI anti-terrorism expert as Mehdi Hassan. Mehdi Hassan is a British journalist. I was thinking about Ali Soufan.
It's
really embarrassing that I got that backwards. I am sorry about that. His name is Ali Soufan. He's an American FBI agent. I really apologize to both men for conflating them, because I'm not good with non-Western names, apparently. It's really bad. You know what? For decades, people confused Bill Paxton and Bill Pullman. So you know what? I'm calling this one as borderline acceptable, but still a very bad mistake on my part.
Yeah, Paxton and Pullman. Well,
they're actually very similar.
I still, except Paxton is now dead.
Yeah. So,
whenever you see
a new guy thing, it's a Bill Pullman thing. Yeah.
And by the way, that's another show that would be interesting to
take a look at.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, Big Love was a fantastic. I mean, again, it's all about religion and gender roles. And it's and how patriarchy poisons everything. But it's also about a lot more than that, but it's mostly about how patriarchy poisons everything. And it features the last job Aaron Paul had before getting Breaking Bad.
Okay. Yeah. That's you're talking about Paxton.
Yes, Paxton, not Pullman.
Yes, I'm talking about Pullman's new show.
Oh, his new show. I thought you were talking about just given our fascination with religion.
Oh, yes. Well, no, I mean... Yeah, watching Big Love, but no, I mean, still, I still go back to.
Oh, his new cop show, right. The Sinner, or whatever it's called.
Pardon?
What is it called? Is it The Sinner? No, what's it? Yes. What's the new? Yeah. The Sinner. Okay, yes, that's something we might be taking a look at. Sorry, just given the amount of time we spend talking about religion, I naturally thought you meant Big Love, but of course, you were talking about the show about serial killers, the thing we're here to talk about. Yours makes a lot more sense than my guess.
Yes,
so.
Serial killers and potential serial killers.
Exactly. All right, so let's get to it. Do you have a synopsis ready for episode 1210?
God help me, I do. I had such difficulty...
Getting through these ones?
Getting through these three episodes.
I don't blame you.
And in fact, the third one, this is before I start, right? The third one, I got about three quarters of the way through last night and thought, I just can't do this anymore. And it wasn't even late last night. It was like 6:30 or something. And I said, I just can't. And I'll do it tomorrow morning. And then Of course, I completely forgot today until all of a sudden it's 12:30. I have an online class at 2 o'clock and I'm going, oh shit, I got to watch this damn thing.
All right.
And I did. I watched the last 20 minutes. So I did watch
you
it.
You are ready to go. Good.
But it was such a slog.
It was anyway. Not without cost. All right, let's get to it.
Seek and destroy. This is our Charlie Manson episode.
Our second Charlie Manson episode.
Yeah, well, this one is even...
More obvious, yes.
Yeah, more obvious. It's very clearly, except for, we'll talk when we'll get there. When a series of home invasions in upscale San Diego neighborhoods turned deadly, the BAU suspects that the crimes were committed by a gang of thrill-seeking young adults. Meanwhile, Walker dedicates himself to determine when Peter Lewis will strike next.
Yeah. And just finds no luck. Just has zero luck.
Neither did anybody else.
Did anybody else. No, but Steven's fun. Watching Steven, like, I didn't know why he'd been added to the show when I first watched it. And watching it this time, the second time, like, I find he's a solid presence. He can't replace Hotch. No one can. Or at least they didn't find anyone who could. But it's weird because you watch it and you're like, I actually feel a little sad that they killed him off so they could bring Daniel Henney onto the show. But they had to keep giving Daniel Henney a paycheck, I guess. So he had to get killed off. I would be interested to see where they went with this character had they, you know, not killed him off.
But you can see.
Yeah.
I think we'll talk about Walker when we get closer to the end of this season.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, because there are some things to discuss in terms of the show itself. But
Something to think about. Let's get into this one. We'll start off with the plot, and then we'll talk about the Reed stuff.
Oh, can I?
Please.
Okay. No. I got to get this out because I'll forget it. Just like you forgot last week. It was the catchphrases.
Yeah.
Remember you were saying about the catchphrases?
Yeah. About her.
That you didn't talk about.
Yeah.
And how, you know, what's his face set up in a way or whatever.
We fly.
Yeah, we good, we fly, right? Ugh. And then you said, and then they changed Emily's to Wheels Up in 20. Yeah, but did you notice that in one of these episodes, she says Wheels Up in 10?
Yep, the first episode, she's Wheels Up in 10. And I'm like, that's not even enough time to drive there.
That's not even enough time to get out of the damn building.
Well, no, you could maybe get down to the cars with your go bags in 5 minutes. Maybe. But really, you should have 10 minutes to get down to the cars with your go bags. It's funny because this week, once she says Wheels Up in 10 and once she says Wheels Up in 30, like they could not.
No, 20.
No, she 20. Also says 30 one of these weeks. I swear to God.
Oh, yes, you're 30. Right. You're right. Yeah.
She does one of each in these three episodes.
It was just like.
They don't know what they're doing.
They don't know what the frick they're doing.
They have no idea.
Okay. So what do you want to talk about with this episode?
Well, no, it's funny because you're watching this episode, which, you know, it's very interesting for one reason only, which is you watch it and you're like, how are they not leaving fingerprints everywhere?
I know.
You see them partying in these houses and picking up everything and touching everything. And I'm like, these characters have to be leaving fingerprints everywhere. And they all have criminal
DNA.
Records. The DNA is harder to run, and it takes longer, and there's limited data.
Not on Criminal Minds.
Well, not on Criminal Minds.
I'm sure it doesn't.
But it's like the lead guy is careful to always wear gloves, and I think his henchman buddy wears gloves too, right? But none of the girls are wearing gloves, right? None of the girls are wearing gloves, and they're touching everything, and they all have criminal records. Like, how were these people hard to find at all?
Yeah, I'm not... Like, they all were, like, prostitutes and things like that.
Oh, yeah. They all had criminal records.
Yeah.
And the one girl, the lead girl, had been in and out of juvie and criminal institutions her entire life.
practically. Yeah.
Yeah. Like they had constantly being arrested for stuff and been moving from one high priced school to the next to keep up with her behavioral problems. So there's no way they don't know who these people are immediately. Right? They're just, I don't understand how they didn't figure this out right away. That didn't make sense to me at all watching it. I mean, it's not actually, within the episode, it's not actually that hard for them to figure out who it is because they're driving. Like, to keep the Manson thing going, they're driving a ridiculous bus. They're driving a ridiculous VW bus that would be the easiest thing on earth to find. And then literally all they have to do to figure out who these guys are is just do a search for, okay, well, look for criminals who own this really ridiculous bus. And they find him right away, you know, so more power to him. His bus is registered in his own name. So there you go. It turns out not to be a hard crime to solve at all. I mean, that doesn't mean things go well for everybody. There's still plenty of people who get murdered, but yeah. The vast majority of this episode is spent talking about, you know, the dynamics of group behavior and alphas and who's in charge of the group and how they, you know, deal with challenges. And as is invariably the case, everything goes exactly the way the team says it should.
Yes.
You know, they fracture in exactly the way the team says they will, at exactly the pace the team says it'll happen. I mean, we make jokes about them being psychic all the time, but it's for a good reason.
I know. And I'm going, well, why didn't you just do a media thing and tell everybody that, you know, right away, all you should have done was gone on the news and told everybody and talked about how these people were dead. That girl would never have stuck with them.
No, like, and you should. And I mean, I guess on one level, you can say that, on one level, you can say that, oh, well, these people are high on drugs all the time and are just partying and doing, you know, they're living these hedonistic, self-destructive lifestyles. Maybe they're not watching the news, right? Maybe, like, and it is believable to say that none of these people might ever turn on a newscast TV. Or read a newspaper, yeah. Right? So I kind of believe that part of it.
But oh, yeah.
Once he shoots people in the head in front of them, like, I don't understand why that girl didn't just walk away. Like, well, there's literally nothing stopping her from walking away and calling the cops.
Yeah.
Because she had no idea anybody was getting killed. She doesn't have to give her name to the cops. She can just be like, once everybody's asleep, BTW parked at this thing right now. Is the murderers you're looking for. Go arrest all of them. Mm-hmm. And that would have worked fine. And I don't understand why the character, and they try to do the thing where the character, like, well, you know, he helps you get off the street and blah 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 blah. Yeah, but he's shooting innocent people in the face. This isn't going to, like, whatever he's done for me in the past, this isn't safe and this isn't going to last.
Yeah.
Because it can't last. He's shooting innocent people in the face.
Yeah.
You know, like, robberies, no, the cops generally don't solve robberies. They generally don't solve home invasion robberies. Like, this stuff, there's so much crime in Los Angeles, most of it never ever gets solved or even meaningfully investigated. But middle class people being executed in their homes, yeah, the cops are going to deal with that situation.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. And it's like, this, that girl, she's got it together enough to, like, pull a gun and try to defeat, you know, the other, the leader of the bad girl. Thank you. And she's got it together. If she's got it together enough to pull a gun and try to defeat the bad girl, she's got it together enough to just walk away and pick up a phone.
Particularly since the two of them go in front of her.
Yeah.
You know, and she can just turn around and walk away.
Yeah. She could just leave at any time. And I don't really understand why she doesn't.
No, neither do I, except that if she did, we would
there's
get
no
the
episode. No, actually, yeah, that's a strong episode.
One always has to think in terms of, well, yeah, but if
narrative
she
leaves, pacing, and yeah, there's no episode.
They're 20 okay. minutes short, right? They're
yeah,
20
that's
minutes
true.
Short of their episode. Oh, I'm so...
So cynical.
I found
It's not a great episode, no.
No.
I mean, it's weird, because last week, we had we were refreshingly okay with all three episodes. And then to get hit with this slog right after, it's like they were overcompensating.
I'm sorry.
Although my favorite thing in the episode is we have two huge failures of direction, both direction and location scouting in the past few weeks. I mean, one of them was season 11, but past few weeks of us doing these episodes. The first was the episode in Kansas where Joe Mantegna cared so little that he showed a mountain in the backdrop of a shot in an episode set in Kansas. And in this episode, they're like, they're in the house where the music was played, blaring, and people got shot in the head. And they have either Emily or JJ in a conversation being like, there's, you know, the houses are all so far apart, it's doubtful anyone would have heard the blaring music or gunshots. And then they walk outside, and there is another house 10 feet away from that house.
Like, I didn't understand. Like, I'm sitting there looking at all of that, right? And just going, say what?
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, I'll say this. I'm not pro Manson family. I don't think anyone can ever point to anything I've done or said, which is pro Manson family. But they, in real life, were smart enough to attack houses that, like, had gates and were, you know, out deep in the hills and had gates. And there was, like, 100 meters from the house to the walls at the edge of the property. In a place like that, yeah, it actually is hard to hear someone screaming or blaring music or whatever. Not so much in this kind of suburban developments we see them attacking in the show, where literally, like, you've got these giant monster houses, and then you've got 3 feet between, and then there's the next giant monster house. Like, so yeah, it's not believable that they would attack this kind of neighborhood. But this kind of neighborhood is the kind of, you know, upper middle class thing that people can relate to. So that's what they had to attack in the episode. Really, they should have been attacking. Although that being said, it's weird because the kind of people they should be attacking, you could never get up to the front door like a people who have a gate and, you know, a fence and 100 meters walk from the gate to the house. You could never get into that house to, you know, ask them to donate money to your brother's cancer. Because it's like, these people have gates.
But not only that, not only that, the minute they found out that there were these strange girls going around asking, why didn't they warn everybody in the neighborhood, find out who had been talked to, and warn them?
Why didn't they massively canvass the neighborhood and talk to everybody? No, you're absolutely right.
Warn them. I mean, that, I'm just looking at this and going, oh, frig.
No, there's no way.
I don't want to rewrite this stupid episode.
Well, no, because there's no way to rewrite it, because you're right. The minute they realize what the MO is, which happens relatively early, the minute they realize what the MO is, they should be going to the press and saying, this group of girls are out there trying to, you know, sweet talk their way into your houses.
And this is what the line they're like using.
That? Yeah. Oh, and by the way, here's the line they're using. Here's the lime green VW van, if you see it in the neighborhood. Like, you're right. They should have been on to these girls.
They should have called in LAPD to go and canvass every neighborhood. And then that couple, last couple, would have survived.
Oh, yeah.
Because the they would have
couple,
either.
Yeah. The black couple would have been completely fine
before
they went after her family.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, and it's like, why isn't it on the media? Also, I got to say, like, be more. I'd imagine that if people in roughly your kind of neighborhood are having. Oh, it's San Diego, not LA. Sorry.
Yes. Sorry.
My bad. I'm the one who said LA. But yes, it's San Diego. I get all of those California towns that aren't.
Well,
I'll be honest with you. All of the coastal towns that aren't San Francisco kind of blend together for me.
Yeah.
But that's just TV has taught me badly. All right. But yeah, it's not a very good episode. It's not a very logical episode. And fundamentally, what kills it most is it's not even that interesting.
Yeah.
And it's like, you got, the real brutal one is the lady. Well, yeah, we already know she was super crazy. Like, she's making out with a guy over corpses. Like, she's super crazy. We know that. So yeah, like, adding that. And then we don't even really get into, well, what caused her super craziness? I mean, is it just like...
She was a bad seed.
She was a bad seed, but it's like, was there a childhood accident to do brain damage? Was she abused in some way that the other daughter wasn't? Like, what exactly turned her into this is something that normally the show would address, but no, the show is more interested at pointing at her just as, no, she's just a monster.
It was, yeah, you know, because clearly something had to have happened pretty young.
Oh, yeah,
she was for having her to all be... these problems and why her parents didn't get her therapy, but I don't even care.
No, let's move on to the Reed half of the story.
Let's start the Reed half of the story.
Baby.
Surface.
So Reed has decided to bring his mother home. And I'll give the show credit. Every single character in the show thinks this is a terrible idea.
Yes.
No one thinks it's a good idea for him. Like, every member of his extended family, every medical professional he talks to, every single person is like, why is she not in a home? And the reason is, it's because if she's in a home, he can't give her some sci-fi drug he's been trying to get. And damn, Reed, you are screwing everything up when you watch this set. He's just screwing everything up. And it's so rough to watch.
Yeah.
Poor Reed. Oh, God. But, I mean, is this the episode with the scrapbook, or is that the next episode?
That's the next episode.
All right, we'll talk about that in a second. This is just them revealing that he has brought her home with him.
Yes, and it's not going well.
It's going anyway, terribly.
Yes. When Tampa, Florida authorities discover a mysterious symbol on the bodies of two residents who previously committed suicide, the BAU sets out to apprehend a killer who believes his crimes to be religious sacrifices. Meanwhile, Reed helps his mother. Okay.
I know.
His mother adapt to new surroundings after choosing to take her out of the clinical study. No, she was put out of the clinical study.
Well, no, no, he took her out.
No. Don't you remember that she got bumped out of that clinical study because they didn't have enough money?
Oh, right. No. That was the previous study. Then he got her into a different study and he thought that it wasn't working. And so he pulled her out. He thought she was getting the placebo. So he pulled her out of it.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, there were two different studies. Yes.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so...
No, so they're not wrong about this.
Okay, no, I'm sorry, writer of synopses.
You were totally right about that one. Yes. No, and it's interesting when you watch this episode, because, again, it's going to factor into Reed's toxic need to be right about everything all the time.
Yep.
Right, that's going to, like, that's the key thing that's hurting him, is
he will not listen. He does not want... Now, the question is, why does he not want his mother to die? Now, we find out in season 15.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like this trying to figure out, why is he so
obsessed?
So completely obsessed with keeping his mother alive. He doesn't go and visit her. He doesn't go. He doesn't have anything ultimately to do with his life. He will not listen to her.
Nope.
Nothing that she wants matters. And she is, of course, right that she should be back. He should have never moved her out of Las Vegas.
Well, I mean, no, I think that years ago, he should have moved her. Once he took this job and he's going to be in, I mean, if he actually cared about being a part of her life.
Yeah, I know
he should have moved her years ago.
He didn't.
But he didn't. You're right. He didn't.
And he should have left her in Las Vegas.
That's absolutely
because
right.
Because basically he's no longer a part of her life.
No.
And, you know, I mean, the only reason my mother survived in some ways as long as she did was she stayed in her own home.
Yeah.
Right?
No, that's absolutely right. People like the comfort of familiar settings.
Completely comfortable. She knew where everything was.
Yeah.
She knew everyone who came into the place. You know, I mean, God knows we were all that my sister and I were there all the time, but, you know, and every now and then, and she had her lifeline and things like that just in case. But the only time she ever called it was when she was having a panic attack.
Right.
which was something completely strange to her. And she thought, you know, she was having a heart attack or something. But
well, I understand they feel very similar.
Well, she had Alzheimer's. I mean, and yeah. She was in the end stages. But she was still able to function in her own home. And as long as she could function in her own home.
Yeah, because you have such the rote experience of having been there. Thousands of days spent in one place. So, of course, you know it instinctively, even as there are problems with your mind. And being moved to a new place is, of course, going to be a hugely taxing experience.
Yeah. And then when we did move her in that last year and a half, she was still in her own apartment in still assisted living.
Yeah.
And, you know, but then again, it was all her own stuff. And it was bedroom, living room, mini kitchen, and there was someone taking care of the laundry, somebody taking care of everything. It was like living in a 4-star hotel.
Yeah.
And you know, all of her meals were taken down with everybody else. And then once she couldn't do that anymore, then that was that in the last 6 months of her life. So she spent the last three, I guess, two and a half.
Yeah, I mean, as long as there is any amount, long as his mother was relatively, I'm not going to say she's super comfortable or super competent, but as long as she was somewhat stable, you're right. It makes more sense to just keep her in Las Vegas if she's not going to be in any kind of a home. But he wants, you were saying.
No, what I was going to say is, no, he wants her not to have Alzheimer's, not to have schizophrenia. He's sure that he's so smart that he can figure out a cure.
Yeah.
No, you can't read.
Well, no, but I mean, as we said, if you wanted to figure out a cure, you shouldn't have gone into law enforcement.
Yeah. If that's what you want to do, if you want to cure cancer, you become a biologist. You want to cure schizophrenia, you become a neurobiologist.
Yeah. But the idea that you're going to go and talk to a lady and come up with a miracle drug. But I mean, that is completely in tune with his character, right? Because he is a guy who, because he's smarter than everyone he meets in his day-to-day life, he assumes he must be smart enough to solve every problem.
Yeah. And we will find out why in the next episode.
Yeah.
We will get there. Let's talk about when Tampa, Florida discovered the mysterious and oh God, help me. This too, you know, I mean, it was, okay. Sinkholes, eh? Okay.
Well, it's loosely based on a real life serial killer who just went around shooting people because his schizophrenia had convinced him that, like, California was going to be wiped off the map with a giant earthquake if he didn't sacrifice people, make human sacrifices.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a real thing that really happened. And that's what this is very loosely, obviously, based on. But it is based on a real thing, as preposterous as this episode seems. And this episode does seem pretty preposterous.
Yeah, and why that child wasn't taken away from those parents a long, long time ago is beyond me.
I guess you just want to say, I hate to always play this card that we play a lot. It's Florida.
Yeah.
You know. I guess the answer to that question is, well, it is Florida. And Florida's pretty terrible.
Well, it is Florida.
Yeah. Whenever something ridiculous and awful happens, on some level, you just have to say, well, you know, it is just Florida. Like, everything about Florida goes wrong all of the time.
Actually, in a few weeks, they go back to Florida, so.
Oh, yeah. So, the remote control car, yes. Oh, God, that episode. I'm so excited to talk about it. I know, but this is an interesting episode because you got Reed.
Excuse me.
It's totally fine. You've got Reed doing his, let's face it, fairly entertaining, trying to geographically profile from a great distance. them noticing that everything is related to that all the bodies are placed on sinkholes.
But that was Luke that figured that one out.
He figured that one out, but once they start like profiling what the sinkholes could mean, and his realize his ridiculous, I think it's the constellation Ophiuchi. Okay, sure.
All right. Okay.
Why not?
Why not? Yeah.
At a certain point, you just have to shrug and say, yeah, whatever, Reed.
Hey, let it go. See, that, I've been doing that more often recently. I mean, these episodes just...
I'm right there with you. Like, I get it.
Like, oh, no, please.
At a certain point, like, you just have to stop fighting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's no, just, I know exactly what you mean. I'm right there with you.
It never gets any better. Like, this weekend, although the next one is going to be worse. I mean, this is... Yeah, okay, so they do find him and his horrible... Like, see, the funny thing is that...
You get this nightmare story of his upbringing. Ugh.
Yeah. Now, I'm thinking about these three.
Yeah.
Like, these three episodes. And I'm going... Or these... The first two in particular, the third one is particularly horrible, but yeah, for other reasons. But I'm... And I'm going, well... I'm trying to figure out exactly what is so wrong with it. You know, yeah. You kind of go think, well, yeah, it's okay. I mean, there's something missing. Now, whether it's because, and I think that might be it, there's too many members of the cast now.
Yeah.
I
think that definitely factors in.
Has hardly anything to do. Walker ultimately has hardly anything to do. Like in these, you've got these episodes, right? And it's like, what?
Well, but I mean, this is what I'm constantly saying in my reviews, which is they have no specialties. They have no specialization. They have no fields of interest that they're the only one who's good at. The entire run of the show, only two people have a unique skill. Reed and his geographical profiling, as silly as it is, but at least it's a unique skill. And what? And Garcia, who is just magic,
yeah,
who has the power of you knowing magic,
yeah. And it just has gotten so bland once they turned JJ into another profiler,
and it's like she used to have a role on the team. Like, she used to deal with the press and deal with the family members. And it's like, do what she used to do, what Monty now does on Criminal Minds Beyond Borders. Right? There used to be someone whose specialty was dealing with the survivors, the surviving family members. And that was an interesting thing to have.
And it was. And there are so many things that, and these characters, like Luke is the only one that kind of is, he's supposed to be, he's a nicer Derek character, but he's also, because they managed to give him this job previous, and I'm not talking about being in the military, but because he hunted.
Yeah, fugitives.
Fugitives, okay. He already came with something kind of different, whereas... Yes. Walker is, I don't even know why Walker cared. I kept thinking when I was watching this, like these last few episodes, and he'd wanted to be in the BAU, and I'm going, be careful what you wish for.
I know.
And that was, and I'm not thinking about him being fired. It was just, why would you, you know, you
why
think
would you choose this?
You have
lifestyle.
You bought the enchilada, the whole enchilada about the BAU, and guess what? It's crap, as you will find out.
Yeah.
As you go along, you are going to find out.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, and it's interesting, just because, please. What?
Oh, no, it's for next week. I have to keep my mouth shut.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, don't run off.
Well, I can't help it that... They're just sitting in front of me, right?
So it's hard not to think about
them. It's hard not to see below. And I saw these words, International Response Team, and I'm going,
oh, no, you forgot about the crossover.
I forgot about the crossover episode. Oh, I thought we'd done at least till the end of season 12.
But no, we got to check in with them when Reed goes to Mexico.
And guess who? Erica Messer, of course, wrote that, and Kirsten Van Ness. Never mind. Let's go back to surface tension. Is there anything you really want to say about this?
Well, I mean, there is. No, because this is the scrapbook episode. I mean, like I said, the plot of the episode is...
Have we moved to the third episode?
No, it's the second episode that she's going through the scrapbook with Reed and his mother. That's the second episode. That's the episode we're talking about right now. While Reed's up, that's why he's talking by phone, because he's got all the stuff with his mother this week.
No. But he only introduces the scrapbook. She doesn't tell him all these the stories in the scrapbook.
Yes, that's this week. The third episode with the gay couple, he's back, like, traveling with the team and such.
Okay, so this is the scrapbook episode.
Yes, this is the scrapbook episode, and this is why this episode is so important. I understand why you would, like, conflate, but he's back. He is with the team in California.
Palm Springs. Palm Springs.
Yeah, we've gone back to Palm Springs.
Another suburb of LA.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, okay, let's go back to this. So let's talk about...
Like I said, like, the actual murderer this week, it's a little on the preposterous side. It's a little on the silly side, as a lot of the killers are. He is, and this is true, like, but I mean, you can't say it's unrealistic, because it's based on a real guy who really was this awful. But yes, he's trying to worship Satan by murdering good people on sinkholes and having them kill themselves to guarantee that their souls go to Satan instead of to heaven.
And so no more sinkholes will come.
Yes. Oh, no. He's just worshiping sinkholes. It's very weird. Because remember, his evil family was killed by a sinkhole. Mm-hmm. And so now he's pro-sinkhole, which is really...
Oh, yeah. Well... Yeah.
No, they don't really get into his... You're right. They don't actually get into what his specific emotions are about sinkholes. He just thinks of sinkholes as his shortcut to Satan.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's all we know about. I thought he was giving stopping them the sinkholes? Sacrifices.
No.
Just no, thank you.
First off, yes, to thank you. That's what I'm saying. He's thanking Satan for sinkholes. That's what I'm saying. So he's not trying to stop sinkholes. He's pro-sinkhole.
Well, he was pro-sinkhole, the sinkhole that took his parents. Yeah,
exactly. But he doesn't care if there are more sinkholes.
But why does he want to go to hell and be with his parents?
He doesn't. Oh, no. No, he wants to be with Satan because he thinks Satan is a friend of his.
Yeah, but his parents are down there, too.
But that doesn't matter if Satan's your main man. Like, if Satan is on your side, it doesn't matter if your parents are there, too.
You see where this episode has taken us.
No, absolutely.
Just supernatural.
Yeah. No, but it's like, Supernatural makes the strong point that if, like, Satan's on your side, you know, you can write your own ticket down in hell.
Oh, John Considine.
Yeah, I know. It actually makes sense. I know the episode is not great, but the internal logic of his plan does make sense. Uh-huh. Like, he does
I'm
want...
I'm not disagreeing with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's just, it's not a great episode, but there is an internal logic to what he wants to do. And I'm not going to claim that there's not. I'm not going to criticize the show for that. But anyway, so yeah, like, and then they find him by just realizing that all of the people he, all of the people he killed have a direct connection to the exact same homeless shelter. And so once they know that, it's relatively easy to track him down and catch him, is what we discover. But let's move on to the most important part of this episode, which is... Reed gets a scrapbook from his mother's brother that she had kept and he had put into storage in Las Vegas. And it is interesting that she both didn't have it at the home or Reed didn't take it with him. But, you know, I don't disbelieve that because his childhood memories are pretty painful. So yeah. I would understand. But then we get like the key thing to understanding. Like, there is one line in the episode, one moment of the episode that you can't believe they put in, because it's everything you need to know about Reed, which is she hits him. She lashes out and hits him hard enough to leave a bruise. And then when she's having one of her episodes, and then when she sees it later, is like, what's that? you know, what happened? And he's like, oh, I just bumped into something. And then he's like, you were always so clumsy, always with bruises, such a klutz. And I'm like, oh my God.
Holy shit.
She beat him his entire childhood.
Yep.
And he covered up for her.
Yep.
His entire childhood.
Yeah.
And that is like, it is such a mind blower, and it is such a sea change for everything about their relationship that it's like, I like my jaw dropped when that happened in the episode, when I saw it the first time. And this one, it's just as powerful every time you see it.
Every time you see it. It is just horrible. Life. So you have the entire thing. So Reed lives, he should have, he's managing to cover it up, but clearly he has either a severe borderline disorder, you know, or a DID.
Yep.
I mean, he has to have, what with the fact that his mother killed someone.
Yep.
And I'm not even going to qualify that far as I'm concerned. It was her fault. And
she pointed a gun at someone and pulled the trigger. And the fact that the gun was another human being doesn't make it any better.
No.
Yeah. But yes.
And it, so, you know, and even if she didn't physically sexually abuse him, she certainly
covert incest was
everything that we saw in those first two, three years, particularly when we were doing the Vanderbeek episodes, the two episodes.
It's there,
and you cannot deny it. You cannot walk away from it. And people who do,
they're living in
denial. You don't want to know. And then in this episode, what you get is the coup de grace what you get, which is that she beat the shit out of him all the time. Now, why the father didn't see it, why the father didn't take him away is still beyond me.
No, and I mean, it is outside the but my solution for that is, you have to admit, the only possible true solution, which is that she threatened to kill herself and Reed if he ever tried to take him. And and he believed it. Like, that's the only thing that could have happened. Yeah. And the father would never tell Reed that.
No, he would never tell Reed that, because Reed still can't. Reed has no way of seemingly, and to the end of episode, the series enders in 15, season 15, never, ever deals.
No.
With who his mother was.
Yep.
And how she destroyed him. And this episode is, it's
powerful.
This is the trifecta. This is the trifecta moment. And then when she does the whole thing. No, but then when she does the whole thing with the tightrope.
I know.
You know, and you just sit there, you know, and she said, no, I didn't tell you. You know, you can't do everything. And no, you were made for better things, dear.
I know. Oh.
And I'm just going, so he's 3 or 4. I mean, and what's she watching him doing this, going, my good Lord, does it ever dawn on you that he could fall off a friggin' picket fence?
I know.
How could you let him walk on that picket fence?
Yeah.
And then how the hell she would have handled it if he'd really fallen off and hurt himself?
Well, yeah, that's a whole other conversation.
It would have been his fault, of course.
Yeah. Oh, no. But the fact that his entire childhood, she was beating him. And the first few times, she would be like, you know, I really love you. I didn't mean it. It's just sometimes I can't control myself. Like, she would use her excuses. And then at a certain point, she wouldn't even have to use excuses anymore. He would just cover up for her.
Yeah.
He would just tell her, because he knows she doesn't remember. So he would just say, I fell.
Yeah.
You know, at a certain point. Like, at a certain point, the abuse victim just does the work of covering up for the abuser in this type of situation. But yeah, just the fact that...
And the fact that he is this... That is that funny thing. I still think we have to pull out Quincy's.
We're going to talk about our... Oh, no, I bought all the Quincy's. I've got every Quincy, season of Quincy on DVD. Are you kidding me? Of course I do. I love that show.
Okay, so we're going to pull out a whole bunch of those episodes, Quincy's, but I still believe... Yeah. You know, watching that episode, and that was in the friggin' 70s.
Yeah, they did a number of episodes about child abuse that were wrenching.
And they're all thinking, okay, that he loves his father and that the mother's to blame. And then they talk to a child psychologist or whatever, and she says, well, and she starts talking about abuse victims and how abuse victims
will cling to the abuser. Yeah.
Right? Because and if they have need,
because they're yeah, they need.
Yeah. They need
well, they've been the brutalized to be the approval of the abuser is the only thing, right, they live for, essentially, at that point.
Yeah. And then Quincy and just kind of, you know, his eyes pop open and goes, oh shit.
I just sent him off with the guy who killed his brother.
Yeah. You know, it's like, it is fascinating. It is a fascinating thing. I'm just reading A Perfect Spy.
Okay.
John le Carré's A Perfect Spy.
Well, I haven't read that one.
You've never read it?
No, I haven't read A Perfect
Spy. Oh dear.
Okay.
You'll have to go pull it out of the.
I love John le Carré, so I mean, I'm not surprised. Don't be surprised if I do read it after your recommendation. I'm just saying I have not already read that.
Okay, because I mean, here's this guy who's writing out. He's of course a spy. He's a double agent.
Right.
But he has kind of left the British service.
Okay.
This is all after Bill Hader has left.
Okay.
You know, the Kim Philby character.
Yeah.
And so then there's this guy and he finally just, his father dies and he just takes off.
Right.
Supposedly to go to the funeral. And he does actually go to the funeral, but then he just leaves. And because he is one of the premier spies, he can manage. Nobody can find him. But anyway, he's writing his memoirs of his childhood. And I'm going, oh, you can just see this.
Yeah.
You will actually enjoy it because it does relate to Reed. And I'm only bringing that up. And I hadn't thought about it, but I've been going through my Jean le Carré's.
As one does.
John le Carré's.
Yeah.
Just to reread some of them. I don't have all of them, but they hold up.
But it'll factor into the way that kind of childhood creates this kind of person who can do this kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. It was, as he's writing, he's going, and he's just waiting to be told who to be.
Right. And I mean, that's fun. And I mean, it comes right into, if you listen to the You're Meant for Greater Things, that moment, and you think, oh my God, and we go back to like it's that line where we were talking about how like logically someone with his brain could have done these incredible things, but his mother transformed him into someone who would only care about, again, medieval morality, right? Who would become obsessed with knights and justice, and to a certain degree, you know, how there is a single way the world should work, and you can be a perfect person. And of course, he was destined to fail at that because there is no perfection. And of course, he is asexual. Yeah, exactly.
Because
he can't have
in the medieval world.
Oh yeah, well, I mean,
he buys the whole
Abelard and Heloise,
and right and. There. Yeah, and
that's his idea of a perfect, Tristan Isolde did get it on. Love potion.
I know, but.
But it's like, he what do you call it? They were under the influence of a love potion, so that's a whole other conversation.
Yes.
Abelard and Heloise, see? Right? It's right there in what his ideal relationship is. You know, with Maeve, is he has this crazy idea of what romance should be. And to him, romance should be a completely asexual situation where people are just writing each other letters all the time.
Yeah, or talking on the phone.
Or just talking on the
equivalent.
Phone. Or the modern
equivalent. Yeah, it's the modern equivalent.
Equivalent of, those writing letters.
Yeah.
Although, I guarantee he also wrote letters.
Oh, yes.
We know they wrote letters. Come on.
Yes. That's how they first met, you know,
exactly.
Writing letters. But yeah. it is, and this one, as I said, this gives you your trifecta.
Oh, yeah. It's all there. Right. And that's the key part, is it's all right there. Yeah. Right. Like you totally understand. And by the way, spoiler alert, this scene is going to factor in for my statement of how I fix the end of the season.
Okay.
But we'll get there when we get there.
Yeah.
That scene, scene of her hitting him and him saying that it was clumsy. That's everything you need to know about Reed in one scene.
Yeah.
Everything.
Everything. And then the other scene about how he wanted to be a tightrope walker and he could never figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
That's
a beautiful scene too.
Yes.
It's like the key scene, the important scene.
Yeah. Like, his mother
hits him and he covers up for her. And then she says the line that proves that he's been doing that his entire life.
Yeah.
She's been beating him and he's been covering for it his entire life. Oh God, poor Reed.
Yeah. No, you have to just feel for him. And
you do.
And in some ways I go, oh, well, you know, but I'm going, Reed, you know, you really did need to have lengthy therapeutic intervention.
Well, I mean, I will say this about the 15th season. He's not there yet, but in the 15th season, he is in therapy.
Finally.
We could say a lot of bad stuff about how the show ended and whether or not he's doing a good job with it yet and will it fully open up yet. He is actually in therapy when the show ends.
Yes, and that's why Ed Bernero was brought back to finish off the Reed segment.
We have to assume. All right, so let's move on after we talk enough about this hour of television. Let's move on to the next episode, which is A Good Husband.
When two dismembered male torsos are discovered in Palm Springs, California, the BAU juggles identifying both victims and establishing a connection. Meanwhile, Reed juggles returning to work and caring for his mother.
Oh, well, that is actually a juggle. I'll give him that.
Reed juggles, the BAU doesn't.
No, BAU doesn't juggle. That's just how you investigate.
God.
You're just describing what an investigation is. They're not juggling anything. But anyway, yes. It's a pretty straightforward episode.
Yeah.
Like, literally, literally all of their guesswork about motive and trying to figure out who, it means nothing because eventually the guy just kills someone he knows in public.
Yep.
And the guy's boyfriend just says who did it. You know, so it's not,
oh, good.
It's not
you
a hard
did
crime
it
to solve. Yeah. And then the, meanwhile,
back
luckily
at the
they
ranch,
get there in
they
time.
Figured it out. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, but it's funny because they get there just in time to save his husband, who also figures it out. And he was almost gets murdered. So thank God he got saved. But yeah, it's funny because you watch it and you're like, so all of their rambling about what the possible motive and what type of person and blah, 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 blah. If he hadn't killed someone he knew, and they just ask the dead guy's boyfriend where he was that night. Oh, he's meeting Steve. Well, it's not Steve. But, you know, he's meeting this guy. Okay, and this guy, is he a violent psychopath? No, but he's married to a violent psychopath. Okay, well, there you go.
There you go. Yeah.
That's all we need. Problem solved. So it's not that hard to solve crimes in the world of Criminal Minds. Or at least sometimes. It's interesting because it gets into that, you know, there can be dysfunctional relationships of all kinds. It's like, opposites, like, abusive husbands are not relegated just to opposite sex marriages, and abusive wives aren't either. Like, this kind of gaslighting and controlling and obsessive stalking, it can exist in any kind of relationship. And that's a good thing to demonstrate. Absolutely. One thing I did enjoy within the episode is there's this scene, and I mean, I use enjoy in air quotes, obviously. There's a scene where they like, so we're going to have to look for divorced couples, because obviously he's killing people who've just gotten out of relationships, and he's obviously stressed about his own relationship. And the funny part is, so they're like, well, only three, and it's like to speed up the episode, they're like, there have only been three gay divorces in the past 6 months in the state, Oh, no, sorry, in the city. And all of those people have left the state, so they can't be the killer. And I'm like, wait. So there, in the past couple of months, there have been 3 gay divorces, and all 6 people immediately fled the state? That does not sound... Did none of them work there? Do none of them have family there? Like, I know they want to speed along, because, like, otherwise you'd have to be like, oh, we have to check their alibi and blah, 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 and they just want to get to the ending. But that line is so preposterous.
Yeah.
That, like, all 6 people who were involved had fled the state of meat. No, like, you could just go and quickly say, well, we've checked their alibis and done. But no, like, we have to get there even faster. So they all left the state immediately, apparently.
Yeah.
And I found that faintly ridiculous. But yeah, like, it's a relatively straightforward episode. And the only thing very interesting in it is that you've got Reed obsessing over how can he, as you say, juggle dealing with his mother and this at the same time. And yeah. It's very interesting the things they're doing with Reed this year.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't like how it ends up, and there is a better fix that we're going to talk about at the end of the season. But I would be lying if I said I wasn't very interested in how Reed is developing as a character. Uh-huh. Because the way that they're being so raw about showing his flaws. Does that make sense? Like, yeah. They're being so raw about revealing what his flaws are and showing that it's like, yeah, he loves his mother and he says he's just trying to help his mother, but the show is admitting that there's something else going on there. And the heart to heart he has with the husband at the end of the episode, like, it seems like he's getting so close to admitting that no matter how loving, like, no matter how much love there is in a relationship, relationships can be toxic too.
Yeah.
You know? And I feel like he's talking about his relationship with his mother in that moment. Unless I've gone crazy. I feel like there's subtext that he's, you know, thinking about his own relationship with his mother on some level. Of this toxicity that it's at the core of what should be loving relationships. Because the husband thinks he loves his husband, but he just wants to control him. Am I reaching too much?
Like, I was watching, because I remember that, I was sort of thinking, well, is Reed finally going to sort of see this?
Yeah.
And I'm going, no.
You might think it's subtext even for him?
I don't even think it's for him, it's subtext. I don't think he yet could even begin to kind of make that real connection that his mother has been controlling him his whole life.
Yeah. That it's, in that's a way, the exact same kind of abusive relationship.
But I do not think that Reed sees that, because the enormity of seeing that is that he would have to do something about it, and that would mean his whole life, because as we find, you know, his whole life would be meaningless. Like, he can't see it. He can't make that connection. He can see it in somebody else. He can
see it.
But
I see what you're
absolutely
saying.
No way that
he could ever see it in himself.
A personal connection.
So maybe I'm looking for something that even the writers didn't see. Like, even the writers, because it's just
I don't think the writers, half the time, the writers don't
know
see
what they're doing. Yeah. They don't realize the implications of the stuff they're doing. I mean, you're probably right, but you see what I mean about that final scene with him and trying to comfort, because they give Reed that scene. Anyone could have done that scene. And I guess because they specifically gave Reed the scene of trying to comfort him and telling him that it's like, no, it's just control. It's just obsessive control, and it's love gone wrong. And it's like, none of this is your fault. And it's like, I thought that because they gave that conversation to Reed, it must be trying to reflect on his own relationship with his mother. But you're saying that I might be giving them too much credit, and if that happened at all, it was just accidental.
I go more with the sort of, well, here there are two issues here. Maybe they thought by giving it to Reed that this was telling us that he's realizing that his relationship with his mother is a problem. My problem with that is that
he then doesn't do anything about it.
Reed doesn't, because I don't think that it doesn't like the writer, Jim Clemente is the writer for this one. And
oh, really?
he may have wanted to do that.
Yeah.
Okay, like, because I mean, remember he was the FBI.
Wait, Jim Clemente is the that's why there's the line about the time Judd Ray's wife tried to kill him.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Right. Now I should check the writers more often, because
you should
get that extra detail.
Yeah, but I think remember that Jim Clemente was there right from the beginning.
Oh yeah, of course, because he was their FBI agent who was there to make sure the show was logical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, which, by the way, how in friggin' 15 seasons of this show, when Jim Clemente's there every day for those 15 seasons, was there never an episode about a writer coming to hang out with the team and, you know, write a book about the BAU? How did that never happen once?
Because that's David Rossi's job.
No, but it's like, you know what I'm saying. People do fiction about the BAU all of the time, and the FBI helps with that because it's good PR. And it seems when that's something that really happened on the show, you know, Jim Clemente working as a consultant, it seems like that should have factored in.
And then becomes the writer for the show. But anyway, and becomes part of the production team. Anyway, never mind. Jim has been there from the beginning.
Yes.
Right? And so he may have thought that what he was doing, and I'm sure that he had more insight into what Bernero was doing.
With Reed.
Reed. I don't know why I think that, but somehow or another I do. And I do think that this may have been written in some ways to do what you think it should do. The problem is that Reed doesn't make that real
connection. Okay.
He only goes as far as, because this woman is saying, you have got to put your mother, you're not home enough.
Yeah.
Like if Reed had quit his job and stayed home with his mother,
might have worked.
Okay. Well, no, it still wouldn't have worked.
No.
But I could have seen bringing her back.
Yeah.
But you cannot do that. You
no.
cannot do that. And if he is that blind, right, to who his mother really is, and she's worse because she's sick.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, she is now got not only schizophrenia, but now she's got Alzheimer's on top of it.
Yeah.
And with Alzheimer's, she should be able to remember everything about the past.
Yeah.
But there's something screwy truly going on. Reed doesn't want to deal with it.
No, that's true. And he just doesn't want to confront. And I guess, we can agree that it subtextually means what I want it to mean, that scene.
Well,
there's just an extra level of tragedy because Reed can't.
No, because Reed cannot take what he is saying and apply it
in
his
own life.
Relationship with his mother. He cannot. And that makes it tragic.
Yes, that's what I was getting at. Because
I think
you don't think the character means it, but you think the show means it.
Yeah, I think Clemente. I don't know that the rest of the writers.
The writers know that.
Okay, yeah. I don't think they've figured any of this out at all. Clemente may have an inkling.
Yes.
That there's something seriously wrong with Reed.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know how you can't see that. I don't know how you couldn't see
that. Oh, well, all the rest of them don't seem to see it. They say,
yeah,
oh,
you're
poor
right.
Reed.
Yeah, Reed's
oh, what a
tragic.
Brave thing you were doing, but, you know, you really shouldn't have,
yeah,
you know,
no,
sometimes.
Not, it's not a brave thing to do this.
This is not the best thing for your mother. It is the hardest thing, okay,
yeah.
When you have a parent who is falling apart. I mean, I have a friend now whose one parent is quite on and off ill and
right.
Now really stressed. I mean, this coronavirus thing stresses older people.
I can imagine.
And his parents, right? And then his mother now, like I've been saying it for 6-8 months.
Right.
And it's it has been the case. And it was diagnosed. Okay. So the mother has Alzheimer's.
Okay.
There is going to come a time when he is, and he is living at home with his parents and he is taking care of them. And right now it's working. And I'm just going, but the hard part is going to be when it can't be anymore.
And yeah, at a certain point, you're going to have to draw the line and decide when you have to.
When you have to take all the other people's advice.
Oh, and right? I mean, and that's what's I find so interesting about these episodes is that they really are going through that with Reed, and you're being tortured watching him, unable to listen to the good advice that everybody else has. And it's very smart because you got even Emily saying you can't do this.
Yeah,
and she's Emily. Saying even Emily.
Yeah.
Who, you know, herself has her own issues with this kind of bad decision making in her own life.
Yeah.
Now, even she can look at this and say, no, this isn't healthy. This isn't good for you and it's not good for her.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah, it's.
Do one of the two, you know.
Exactly. It's interesting. Yeah. Like, it's literally. Yeah. I found that scene to be one of the most interesting things. Right?
Yeah, no, it was, and I think it was trying. But the fact is that the thing with Reed is so deep seated.
Yeah.
That everything that leads us up to these two episodes just reinforces how deep seated Reed's pathology is.
Right. Okay.
Okay. And it just reinforces it that even though he can say the right words, he cannot apply them to himself.
Okay, I see what you're saying. And again, when you hear my fix for the end of the season...
Otherwise, he wouldn't have become a drug addict again.
That's true. No, you're absolutely right. And if you see, what do you call it? When we get to the end of the season, you will see why I think this moment, like the reveal, and then a moment like this is so integral to what I think they should have done with him as a character. Yeah, but we'll talk about that at the end of the season. Speaking of... what are the next three episodes we're going to watch?
Spencer. So this is
the crossover episode.
Yes, this is this is what I was talking about. This is the crossover episode. Oh, I thought it was done with it. I'd forgotten that they actually in this episode.
Well, no, because they had to remind everybody that the show was coming back next week, so they had him. So they had to show up here. Yeah.
Okay. Then
we know why they did it.
Course. Yeah, I know why.
Collision Course, which is of course the unbelievably ridiculous, like hijacked car, like an episode that's so dumb. Like it might be not the worst episode of the year, but by far the dumbest episode of this season. So dumb. All right, Collision Course. What is 12:15?
Alpha male.
Which one is alpha male?
When four Philadelphia civilians are disfigured in planned attacks, the BAE.
Okay. Yeah. The acid thrower thing, right? Guys throwing acid in people's faces. Okay. Yeah. No, it's just when you say people are disfigured, because it's titled alpha male, there's also the one where a woman with a forked tongue is disfiguring people, but I guess that's not this year. It's okay if you've forgotten that episode. It's a very forgettable episode.
Most of the, I'm going through these episodes, and for some of them, it's like, oh yeah,
it's like you're watching it for the first time.
First
isn't
time,
it?
Like I'm watching it for the first time.
All right, so that's your homework if you want to watch along with us. Is episodes 13 to 15 of season 12? So that should be a ton of fun.
Well, it may not be a ton of fun, but we're going to have lots to talk about next week.
Well, at least for that first half hour. Like, we're going to spend like 40 minutes on that first episode, aren't we? Just kind of feels that way, doesn't it?
Yep.
But anyway, so that should be a ton of fun. You can join us back here next week for that. If you have any questions for us, if you have any comments, if there's any profiling related fiction that you think we should check out, we would love to hear from you. Just drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We will see you back. Oh, yes. And if you're listening to this on some sort of a podcatcher or app, be sure to give us a rating because that is how people find the show. We'll see you back here next week for more Criminal Minds. But until then, I'm going to say that's right. Au revoir.
And have a good weekend.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.